You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am so excited to be here today with my friend, Kristen Bry. We're going to test the theory that the internet can handle two Kristens in one place. So if you don't know Kristen, she is a radio host, a young mom, and as Wisconsin as they come. We're going to talk about juggling life on air with actual life. We'll talk about stories not getting covered in our state and why local media still matters. And we're also going to get into some of the messy stuff. Government shutdowns, SNAP benefits, whether Democrats have completely lost their minds. And that New York Times piece that came out recently that asked if liberal feminism ruined the workplace, that's going to be something that we dig into. So Kristen is living all of this in real time. She is in the media. She is raising a daughter here, and she's got plenty of opinions. So let's do this. Kristen Bry, welcome.
Hello. Not only two Kristens that spell it the right way.
It's so funny how we have to specifically say that, like I-N. Every time.
It's a thing. It's a thing that we bond together when we know that it's spelled with two I's.
I just get this song in the back of my head, like, can the internet hold us? We'll see.
Is that Macklemore?
I think so. That was good.
I was trying to think. That's like what it sounded like. Unclear.
We'll ask our producer to look into that. Producer, please look into that while we actually dig into the meat of our conversation here. So many of us know you from WTMJ or from As Goes Wisconsin or Civic Media back in the early days. You have a huge footprint here in Wisconsin. It is where things started for you. But you also earned your chops elsewhere. So can we just go back and do a little like Kristen Bry life review and make sure that everybody is on the same page about how fascinating your path has been and how you got to this point?
Sure. We only have 14 minutes in this first segment, so I will tell the short version. So born in Madison, Wisconsin. My parents are from central Wisconsin, Wisconsin Rapids. They both went to Madison, graduated there, raised my brother and I there. And I grew up mostly playing sports, but also had the theater bug. And I'm around 16, had been doing, like, had every intention on going to a conservatory of some sort for theater, but got the opportunity to go to, like, an L.A. talent search thing. And from that got offers from agents and managers, and they're like, move out for pilot season. And I was like, what's pilot season? Which is hilarious because now pilot season's not even really a thing anymore because it's just because of streaming. Things are constantly getting cast. But at the time, back in 2002, pilot season was the like a 3 or 4 month period where they were casting all of the pilots that would get picked up, would get shot, then some would get picked up by networks, and then some would actually make it to air. And those would be the new shows that premiered in the fall. So it was the time when you would go and the highest concentration of auditions, which is why they would encourage people who are doing it on a trial basis to come out during that period. So my dad came with me because he was like, he had stopped working at Merrill Lynch and was like, sure, let's go try it out.
And you're like 16 years old.
And I'm 16. And so we go out for about 3 or 4 months and I audition a lot. I get a lot of callbacks. I don't book anything, but I do well enough that my agent and my manager were like, you should move out here like permanently. And for some reason, my parents were like, okay.
Great idea.
And so I spent my senior year of high school in L.A. acting, graduated from Santa Monica High School, which famously is also where Stephen Miller graduated from. Oh. He was the odd one out at that very liberal high school. But
you didn't go to school with him, though. He wasn't.
No, he was a year older. So I looked that up. So I was like, did I actually like cross paths with this guy? But no, he was 2003 and I was 2004. Wow. And so just missed him. Darn. And so graduated high school, was acting, didn't go to college right away. And then around 2021, I started taking classes at community college for fun because I was like, I don't know, just wanted to try it out. I was dating someone who was in college at an Ivy League university. I was like, oh, maybe I should like actually be smarter. And then as I did that, and I realized, because I had never identified as being, I guess, smart. Like, I was the theater kid. I was the basketball player. And I had other friends who were like really good students. But then for the first time, once I was in community college classes, and I was like, oh, I'm actually a good student. And so something around that time, and it kind of opened my eyes after my entire life, I had just defaulted thinking I was gonna be an actress and never even entertained the idea of any other profession. And by going to school, I started to realize like, oh, I could do whatever I wanted. Like, I don't have to be an actress. And so ended up going to college. I transferred to UC Berkeley. So I got out of LA, went to Northern California. That is where I really dove into politics and public health and women's studies and saving the world and all of that idealistic young people type things that you study and pursue. And then when I graduated, though, I was living in the Bay in 2011. And what do? You get a job in tech because that's where the jobs were. And so started at like basically software sales, like B2B software sales startups, which is such a far cry from what I'm doing now. But like learned a lot of skills in sales and marketing and management and databases and stuff that I still use, but I just was not passionate about. I managed people as a director of sales development by the time that I... like at the highest point of my career doing that. Moved to New York with my company 3 weeks after Trump was elected in 2016. And I was, like many people, rocked by that election. And not just because I was the epitome of the like liberal coastal bubble of everyone I worked with basically shared the same politics, or at least I think they did. Everyone was kind of navel gazing as far as like the age that we were, where it's like, I care about politics, but I'm not really like involved in politics. Like I have discussions over drinks when we're at whatever bar that we're at, but not in like involved. Like I don't think I really voted for local elections when I lived in San Francisco. Like I was not paying attention to the midterms or anything like that in my mid-20s. So when Trump got elected, I was like, how do we let this happen? And I already was in motion. I'm really talking for a while, but we're gonna go with it. I'll start to speed it up. I moved to New York with my company, but I didn't even make it 6 months between getting out of the tech bubble in San Francisco, 6 months into the Trump administration, the 1.0, and realized like, I can't sell software for the rest of my life. And so without much of a plan, which is a really ballsy thing to do in the most expensive city in the country, I just quit. I was just like, I don't want to do this. And I had saved enough money because tech pays well that I had some runway to figure it out. And so in like 2017, so I just basically like the 8 year memories are starting to pop up of my very first videos of me putting myself on YouTube, and they're very, very cringy.
But it was the background, the acting, the tech.
For sure. But I was like, I was teaching myself how to write. I was teaching myself how to edit. Like, and so like 2017, like I started a Facebook, YouTube page of trying to do political comedy, but like teach myself how to write jokes, but also like teach myself politics at the same time. Because it wasn't like I was coming with expertise. So start on the content journey, fast forward to 2020. My then boyfriend and I had gone back to LA. We're trying to make it figured out there. I was trying to pitch a show to Quibi. If you remember that short thing that never actually got off the ground, but like early 2020, Quibi was going to be the thing. But I also had this idea for a documentary. So about Wisconsin during an election year. And I start like dog with a bone. Like I need, this is like, I got to do this. So I've set up all these interviews. I come back to my house, my parents' house in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, on March 15th, 2020, and everything shuts down. Mm-hmm. And I proceed to pivot and stay in Wisconsin and like, all right, I know how to make content. I can't do this documentary, but I can make content from my parents' house in Wisconsin and focus on news and politics and like get out the vote content for the niche of Wisconsin voters. So I started doing that. People liked it. I got some traction. I realized I think I got to make move back to Wisconsin permanently. Did. Again, moved to Milwaukee without a job and was like, I'm just going to keep making content and I'll figure it out. And then that turned into part-time work at Journal Sentinel, which is going on 3 years since I've been with them. Then it was part-time with WTMJ. Then it was full-time with Civic Media. Now it's full-time back with WTMJ. And then interspersed with all of that has been my own social media and moderating events and emceeing and a bunch of different things. And so like I have a very, needless to say, I have a very untraditional background of how I have built everything and put it together. That was a very long explanation, but I think I made it under the time limit.
You did great. Your untraditional background, I think, reflects your untraditional current situation, which is like this hodgepodge, creative, innovative, daring, not afraid to take a chance, to leave it all behind and to jump. And that's part of what makes you so exciting. And in this space, like this is a space that is typically the domain of men, but here you are as a young woman in Wisconsin, in news and entertainment, creating the kind of content that people really want to see. What does that feel like?
I don't know. I don't really think about, I guess I don't really think about it like that. I think one, I feel very grateful that I was taken seriously enough to be given the jobs that I have. Which is like, I don't know, you know, it's the imposter syndrome in me is like, I don't have any credentials to be doing this. It was truly just the opportunity of the bosses at Journal Sentinel, the bosses at WTMJ being like, you have something. And so I feel very grateful to have what I have. I think I just kind of think about, is it honest? Is it funny? Is it entertaining? Is it true? And just keep iterating on that versus I'm one of the few women who gets to do this or does this or
that's a good question.
I haven't really thought about it.
What are the credentials that in this social media world where people are just consuming content like crazy on TikTok and Instagram, nobody has credentials. It's not like Diane Sawyer is making these videos.
I think like you have credentials. So like when you get on and you talk about medicine
and
you talk about doctor stuff, you have credentials. When lawyers get on and talk about lawyer stuff, people who've worked in government talk about government stuff. People who've worked on campaigns talk about campaign stuff. Like that's what I mean more of my analysis purely comes from being a smart person, not from actual experience. And that's more what I mean. And it's not that it's not valuable. It just doesn't come from a place like Joe Zepecki, who's on our show every Friday, who it's like, guy's been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't have all of these like Wisconsin Public Television Volunteer of the Year award things hanging up on your wall like I do.
Do not have
all right. I'm talking with Kristen Fry. She's the host of As Goes Wisconsin. She's a co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and she's a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist. We are talking all about her, politics, Wisconsin, women. There's so much yet to come. So join us after this break. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm talking with Kristen Bry. She is the host of As Goes Wisconsin. She's the co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and she is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist. Today, we are testing the theory that the radio can hold to Kristen's IN. Yeah, baby.
At the same time.
And so far, it's holding up. We're doing it.
Yeah. We've not broken the internet yet.
We haven't.
We don't know. It could happen.
It could. We'll see how the playback goes. Now, in the last segment, we talked about what it's like to be a woman in media and entertainment in Wisconsin at this time in history. But let's take on the bigger question that's being asked all across the country. Did women ruin the workplace?
Did you watch the podcast?
I haven't. I have a really hard time with Russ Douthat. Is that how you say
it? Is it Douthat or do I don't? I always I said this exact same thing. I was like, I forgot how to pronounce his actual last name.
I've listened to a few of his podcasts, and I just really struggle with like some of his fundamental beliefs. And I
mean, he's a conservative, right? Like he is conservative, capital C. And so both women that he interviewed for this. Helen Andrews and Leah, she has like three names. It's Leah something something. Both identify as certainly conservative women. And Helen Andrews had written a piece recently talking about the feminization of the workplace. And it was frustrating because a lot of her theory is like, feminization equals wokeness. And it was still just like this wokeness thing. And it's like, that is not what feminism is.
They went and immediately then, to that in the piece too. And that was like, click. I had a really hard time getting past that.
And then it was interesting because I found myself agreeing more with what Leah, and I feel bad that I'm blanking her name, but she also is, because I think there's multiple layers to this conversation. One, I think New York Times was trolling everybody for clicks with that headline. Because the actual conversation is not, at no point do either the guests or Ross say women ruin the workplace. Like that's not the actual accusation. But it's interesting because what I actually got from it is, one, I did not like it. There was like in the same way, like the whole Helen Andrews. I also just have a fundamental problem with women who have benefited from feminism, then turning around and criticizing what feminism has provided more women. And it's like, do either of you think you'd have your career in academia and writing if there were not people, women before you who like paved the way to make this available? So like that is like the whole thing with like my huge problem with any woman who is like peddling tradwife content. And it's like being a content creator is a job. Like it is a job that actually requires a lot of work. And so, and then like, in turn, you can make a lot of money from it. So for you to be peddling this idea that women shouldn't be working, or like any woman who's on a Turning Points USA stage, who like Candace Owens, who makes lots of money. And so it's like, that is like the mentality of like, I made it, you shouldn't, don't do what I say. Like that's the stuff that drives me nuts. And so I think it was an interesting conversation though, because I was like, what is conservative feminism?
Well, and
because that was what the subheadline was, right? It was like, can conservative, because they changed the headline to,
they changed
did
the
liberal
headline.
Feminism ruin the workplace, and can conservative feminism save it?
Yes.
And I'm like, what is conservative feminism? Do you know?
No. Well, maybe it's the hypocrisy of having benefited and then kicking out the ladder behind you and making other people follow in the beliefs that you are talking about, but clearly not living.
Well, and the only thing, because I was Googling it earlier today, I was like, what is the definition of liberal feminism and like, what is the goals of it? And it like, what comes back is more of like the, and I think the name of the book that Leah What's-Her-Face wrote was like the dignity of dependence. And I think it's more in line with what I can gather of like inherently believing that there are differences between men and women and that there are different roles that men and women can play and that it is, it is, I don't know, fair is not the right word, but it's setting women up for failure to basically have them always be competing with men in that, like, we're always just being judged as lesser men in the workplace, in sports, instead of, like, actually recognizing that, like, men and women are different and they're, but, like, I see to that, that to me is an even more, like, radical idea beyond liberal feminism of, like, oh, we need to change the structures. Like, I feel like in the, like, the evolution of feminism, it's like we had to do liberal feminism with laws and policy and politics and like adhere to the man's world, like to a man's world and the world that men built. Cause like they weren't ready to just like tear it all down. But like the next iteration of that is actually creating a world that like works for everyone and identify, like recognizes people's differences, not just through genders, but also like through race and like abilities and stuff like that. And it's like, but that like doesn't sound like traditional conservatism to me at all. So I'm like, so what do you guys want?
Right. I felt like it tapped into the what is a woman argument, because then they also went into, well, the thing that defines women as different than men is their ability to have a baby. And then they started to kind of enter this like abortion conversation. And I was just thinking this whole thing, from changing the title of the article to right away equating feminism, women in the workplace with wokeness, just felt like a trope. It just felt like keyword after keyword after keyword. And
you're like, is this the free press? What am I listening to?
It didn't feel worthwhile. It did not at all feel like a conversation. It felt like three people going, yeah.
Yeah. And so it is funny to me, the reactions that have come out of it, which I think is what makes a good thought piece, even if the original thought piece is hollow or lacks depth or lacks like saying something that people really sink their teeth into. But like, I think there was the opportunity just from that headline alone for so much conversation after it, that it is worth talking about.
It's worth talking
about. Or at least the memes have been good.
The memes have been great and the comments have been great. Definitely worth looking at that.
Yeah,
hey, everybody,
absolutely.
I'm talking with Kristen Bry. She is the host of As Goes Wisconsin. She's the co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken and a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist. We have to take a little break, but when we come back, let's hit some spicy issues like SNAP and the government shutdown. And hey, how about the future of the Democratic Party? You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm talking with Kristen, I-N, Bry, host of As Goes Wisconsin, co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you've missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts or on my YouTube channel at Dr. Kristen Lierley. All right, my friend, we have hit the issue of women ruining the workplace, specifically liberal feminists. One thing that is actually ruining a lot of workplaces right now is the government shutdown. And we're taping this just a couple days after a handful of Democratic senators essentially defected from the party, voted for the continuing resolution to end the shutdown, but really caused a big schism in the party. You yourself don't call yourself a Democrat anymore. You used to be very progressive. Where are you?
Well, I think I'm, I don't know. I have a hard time actually identifying, but like it's weird how labels work. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I think so. My co-host for at WTMJ is Steve Scafidi, who, like, lifelong conservative Republican, never Trumper. And it's interesting to me because he doesn't identify as a conservative, but he still identifies as a Republican. And to me, that feels backwards because it feels like parties change, but an ideology does not. Mm-hmm. And to me, conservatism is the ideology and Republican is the party. And the same way that I know leftists who are like very critical of the Democratic Party. And it's hard because I think in a two-party system, you're like, well, this is the way that I typically vote. But using it as an identifier feels different. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure I ever was like, I am a Democrat. Like, I was never someone who I think like wanted to work for the party, or like that was like, I'm not like a donator. Like, I don't really donate to political parties. I certainly don't donate to political parties. I don't really donate to politicians. Like, I donate to nonprofits. And so I think, my first thing is everything was starting to come down on Sunday night and we were piecing together what happened, why it happened. And the thing in my voice was like, God, this is why I don't call myself a Democrat. And this is what, you know, and I think in my position in media, and I balance weird worlds as far as I think I got into media to talk about issues, and those issues typically align with the left and with Democrats. And thus, in turn, a lot of times it is messaging in the hopes of those Democrats getting elected. But it's not so far as wanting to advocate explicitly to get Democrats elected, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
so it's like,
not like you're a party operative.
Yeah, and it frustrates me when I am categorized as that. Like recently when I was criticizing DPI for some stuff, some people on the right were on Twitter were like referring to me as like breaking ranks and like a Democratic proxy. And I wanted to engage and be like, no, I'm not. But I didn't because it's useless.
Don't engage.
And so, but that I think part of that is wanting as a member of the media. Now, my role is for people to trust me, they have to trust that I am being honest with them with my actual opinion. And like, while 80% of the time it may overlap with candidates or a party or whatever, it's still, I have to be able to criticize them as a party or as individuals if I want people to trust me, right? And that becomes harder. It's easier on a national scale because I don't know as many people on the national scale. It becomes a lot harder on the local scale because I know a lot more people on the local scale. Local being both Milwaukee and the state at this point. Like 5 years in, as we approach a governor's race where I personally know or am friends with every single Democratic candidate, like it's going to be a harder conversation to openly criticize any of them, right? Because like a lot of them, I have their cell phones in my phone, and so like it's a weirder thing to bridge. But anyways, I don't want to totally derail it. But yeah, like I'm very uncomfortable ever being like I'm a Democrat, and that doesn't ring true for me at all.
I think there are so many people, especially here in Wisconsin, because we know that people tend to feel like they are a Democrat or a Republican, but they also want to have a relationship with that person who is shaking their hand at their door. And I feel like as a former candidate who is a Democrat, but grew up a Republican, but actually did never want to join a party, just wanted to like do exactly what you're saying. I want to talk about the issues. I want to be helpful. It is really, it's enlightening to have those conversations at the doors. Because you see how you can win people over.
Yeah.
But when you look at the bigger picture, we are so polarized. I've never seen our country so polarized where you can pick any one issue and wherever you stand on that issue, it's just so clear which party you belong in.
Except data centers.
Data centers. So
that's like the one issue that's going to be really interesting to watch next year. But I don't let me derail you.
No, you're right. Well, I think that's what we have to do is find those issues that make people start to ask bigger questions. But data centers are complicated. Yes. And it's the complicated stuff. Most voters, like you in your 20s, like me in my 20s, have low information. And that's why they choose a D or an R. And that's why if you want, like if you're running for city council or even like a state ledge, you have to win them over personally by knocking on their door and making sure they know what your name is. The actual two-party system makes it that much harder. And I don't know how we move forward in the future, given the polarization that we continue to experience without setting that aside and making those personal contacts with each other.
I know. I mean, I think about this with our friend Emily Cephos, and like the doors that she knocks and the fact that she's running again. And like, had she not been, I've asked her this because she was on our show, had she not been, or currently is, I think still, the chair of the Outagamie Democrats. So it's like, yep. All right, well, like, you're a Democrat. But like, if she had not done that and she was running for the first time with her messaging, with her commitment to knocking doors and having actual conversations, and if she was running as an independent versus a Democrat, like, she could win. Right? Like we have data that shows, like, there was a great Ezra Klein podcast recently where he interviewed Jared Abbott from like the some think tank that focuses on working class people. And they were talking about specifically like the Democratic brand is so damaged right now that people with the same economic populist platforms, one running as an independent, one running as a Democrat, the independent wins like every time by like almost double digits.
We have this conversation up here in Northeast Wisconsin all the time because the Democratic brand is so toxic up here. But, and like in a case like Emily's situation, she's running for state Senate in the Appleton area. It's not a targeted district. She's not going to get a ton of support from the Democratic Party. So what's the advantage to running as a Democrat? You know, you'll pull those legacy Democrats over and that makes it easier, but is it so much easier, especially when you campaign like Emily does? She does the door knocking.
That's
She's
what I mean.
She's out in the community. She's doing the food. She's doing all of the stuff that people think politicians do to get their votes.
And she's also talking about issues that people actually care about, right? Because I think there is an economic populism, especially as things get more expensive, as it gets harder to get by on the median income. That will be the conversation in 2026 of like affordability and actually addressing people where they are. Cause as we're seeing right now with SNAP benefits, like it's not, and I got the opportunity to interview a bunch of food bank executive directors in the lead up to what we thought was going to be like November 1st, everything getting cut off. So this was the Wednesday before November 1st. And we did this through Journal Sentinel. So it's the video turned out great. We put a bunch of different of like the best quotes from those conversations, but I personally getting to do those interviews was both inspired because these people are doing incredible work and have been doing incredible work. It was also depressing to hear that, like, while there's a lot of media attention right now on this year over year, food banks are seeing more people. Mm-hmm. And it's people who some of whom are on SNAP, and that's part of their monthly way to get by. But it's people who sometimes just have a bad month and they show up. And there is an increasing affordability crisis across the country. And there is opportunity. I mean, there's opportunity to campaign on that. But there's even more opportunity if there's like actually the political will to try to do something about it. Because my brother who works in finance, like, he sends me graph after graph almost every day of just, like, we talk about the K economy. We talk about the fact that, like, since the 70s, basically the portion of labor and income only going down and the portion of capital and wealth only going up, and how we actually help. It's not even like the average person. It's most people. Mm. Because, like, I don't know. Like, I think about this as far as like the money we make as a household and where that puts us in like the strata of income. And like, while we're not suffering, I'm like, we're not rich. Like, how are people who make half of what we make getting by? Once you think of rent or mortgage or interest rates or energy costs or daycare or healthcare premiums, like, and like healthcare premiums is such a joke because that's just like the ability you're paying. It's like her insurance where you're like, I'm paying you all this money and I'm not even sick yet. Mm-hmm. Like,
and odds are, if you're a young, healthy person, you're not going to get sick. And so you're not going to get insurance. So you're going to pull yourself out of the pool. And then
the mandate's gone.
Right. And you could suffer a catastrophic illness and that would ruin the rest of your life. And in the meantime, the whole insurance pool gets sicker. So healthcare gets more expensive. But that's
and then you just go on TikTok and you hear someone who says, like, just don't pay your, just like go to collections. Mm-hmm. See what happens. And like 7 years, it might ruin your credit. But, you know, 7 years from now, it'll be gone. And like, that's the kind of advice that's out there right now as far as like how to pay in cash, because sometimes there's better deals if you pay in cash, how to challenge any medical bill that you get and like actually get an itemized bill, how to just not pay and like roll the dice and see what happens and like and negotiate and like all these other things besides pay a healthcare premium.
Right. All the loopholes that you have to navigate because the system is so fundamentally broken. And just watching Bernie Sanders after this vote, I was feeling so Bernie and thinking about like the history of Wisconsin and the people who have voted for Obama and Bernie and Trump. And people are just looking for a champion. And it seems like Bernie has that message that really resonates with people. And that's what he says over and over and over again. Yet it doesn't break through to the layer of electeds who are actually making those decisions.
That's actually a good quick promo because someone else brought it up to me. I've seen it, but a more perfect union. My good friend John Russell took Bernie to West Virginia to like one of the Trumpiest counties in the country.
Oh, I saw a promo for this. Yeah, on TikTok.
So John's awesome. He gave a speech to the DNC. But that's if you want to go check that out, because you can see in real time how Bernie, through actual conversation in West Virginia and people being like, oh, you're totally different than what they told me you were going to be like. And like watching kind of like the gaslighting get like the fog move away as they have these conversations with Bernie. It's fascinating.
It has to be personal conversations. It has to be discussions where we're talking about real life things and then real life solutions. And we'll do a little bit more of that when we come back after this break. I'm talking with Kristen Bry. She's the host of As Goes Wisconsin, co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and a columnist. I don't know, I have such a hard time saying that. With the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am here with Kristen Bry, host of As Goes Wisconsin, co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and a columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've talked about everything, lots of Wisconsin, lots of women's stuff. You know what we haven't talked about, though? How do you, you said early on in our conversation that when you lived on the West Coast, you lived in a bubble, and everybody had the same experience, and everybody kind of felt the same way. That is not how Wisconsin is. We live amongst people who have different opinions, and sometimes we're afraid to share our different opinions because maybe we know that so-and-so voted for Donald Trump or so-and-so is a raging liberal. How do we have those conversations in this environment and maintain our friendships?
Ooh, friendships is, I'm trying to think of the conservative friends that I have. And I do think I'm lucky in that, like, I have some of my conservative friends are super smart. And so there's some of my people that I love talking to the most because of it's challenging, right? It's challenging. They challenge my opinions. It's interesting to hear, like, I haven't thought of it that way before. And like, that's different than, and like, that's a different conversation with people who have a different set of belief systems that is, they're not into politics. They just like, I just believe this because I believe this, which is also then different than me talking at people through the radio or talking at people through my column to an unknown, unfaced,
or like
into the universe, and then those people having thoughts and opinions about what I said, and feelings about me, and sometimes voicing those things in email or on our text line, and so all of it, I think, for me comes back to seeking to understand versus to persuade. And it's interesting because you said before, you're like, oh, you were really progressive, and I don't. It's like, I think depending on who I'm talking to, I get people project how they think I am and what my views are through their own lens. I think there's some people who do think I'm super progressive. And then I think there's some people who see me as like rational and moderate and center left.
How do you see you?
I see myself as a collectivist. Like I see myself when I really try to underline what encapsulates, the policies that I believe in. Like, I believe that we are all stronger when we work together, and that policies should have a strong social safety net, and that like we're only as good as we are as a community, and that like I am safer if you're not hungry, right? Which is like the James Baldwin quote or something iteration of that. And so like that, I think it's like that could be progressive, that could be socialist, that could be like, it could be a lot of different things, but like I don't, that's kind of where I feel like I fall into is like, what, how do we take care of each other? But like, how do we take care of each other also means we take care of people who don't agree with us. Mm-hmm. And so I am more, and it's hard in this period in 2025 under the things that we were watching happening in the federal government. Like this year has been very hard to know like the proverbial, like, what do I do with my hands? Of like, mm-hmm. I work in media, I work in opinion media. So it's not like I'm a reporter where it's just my job to ask hard questions and report objective facts. Like my job is to give opinions and analysis and like have hot takes, if you will. I don't know how hot they are, but they're there.
They're your takes. They're entertaining.
And takes. The most effective and valuable way, and I don't have an answer to this yet, by the way, the most effective and valuable way to be right now, because for me, my gut instinct is to build bridges. And it's like to have the conversation with people who don't agree with me, because I think I am equipped to have those conversations and stay even keeled and be a strong communicator and translator to be able to build that. But like that is very hard to do. And then also say, there's an authoritarian tyrant in the White House, because those people that you need to have those conversations with are not necessarily going to trust you if you're only bashing this person. But it also feels hard sometimes to not call a spade of what you're seeing. And so there's so much back and forth of like, how do you approach these conversations? How do you approach these conversations in writing, on social media, on the radio? Who are you talking to? And like, I don't have an answer for that yet. But I do, my gut instinct after the election last fall was, we're not going to get out of this by having less conversations. And I know there's a lot of people, and I'm not asking, like, I would never expect people whose like humanity and identity are being threatened to be in that position where it's like, you should go out and talk to more people who don't think that you should exist. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying for me personally, who is like safer to do that, I am leaning towards like that being the more effective place for me to be, which means that sometimes I have to like moderate my tone or moderate how I talk about things in order to have other people be able to like hear me.
I love that you're workshopping this as you're having this conversation. And I bet that you're laying that at night thinking, where am I? But you know, one thing that you have kind of mentioned as you've been describing this is the context. It's all about the context. And when we've got so much going on in the White House right now and in the federal government, it is a very different situation when we're talking about LGBTQ issues than when we've got a really supportive federal government. And that's why it is important for you to keep having these conversations and to have them both with other people and into the universe the way that you do. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for joining me today.
I know, this was so fun. It's always so fast. So fast. I gotta get up to your house again. That beautiful house. Hang out.
Yeah. We could do this together in the living room.
I know, we could do it in person.
With a fire. We could. That would be so much fun. Okay. It's a date because we've got the midterms coming up and there's so much going on. So fire, wine, you, me, and more conversation.
And a microphone. Like yeah.
And a microphone.
Kristen and Kristen.
All right, my friends, this has been the Kristen and Kristen Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Many thanks to my friend Kristen Bry, host of As Goes Wisconsin, co-host of WTMJ's Point Taken, and columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it on civicmedia.us and wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, you can watch on my YouTube channel at Dr. Kristen Lierley. As always, we love your thoughts and your feedback on any of our socials, so please send me a message. You can always find me at Dr. Kristen Lierley on pretty much all the socials. And many thanks to Abraham Lierley, our producer, and so much more, and Nick Tierman, who composed our theme song. Until next week, you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.